Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We have to start winning wars again.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Let's win one, says President Trump.
Now, we never win a war. We never win. And we don't fight to win. We don't fight to win. So we either got to win or don't fight it at all.
So after fighting two wars and not winning, President Trump wants to be ready for anything.
This budget will be a public safety and national security budget, very much based on those two, with plenty of other things, but very strong. And it will include a historic increase in defense spending to rebuild the depleted military of the United States of America at a time we most need it.
$54 billion, a 9% increase, he announced this week, to be paid for from cuts in the EPA and the State Department.
Where's the money come from?
Well,
because it doesn't seem, if you cut all the money from EPA and all the money from state, that's about $50 billion.
Well, I think the money's going to come from a revved-up economy.
The president on Fox and Friends, $54 billion is a huge increase in military spending. Are we responding to a threat or watching our capabilities slowly rust away? Dakota Wood is a retired U.S. Marine Corps lieutenant colonel with 20 years of conflict experience. Wood says we're basically running on fumes from the fatigue of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
What happens is the spending has to increase in order to account for the munitions that are used, the fuel that's used in ships and vehicles and in airplanes, all the equipment that was blown up by roadside bombs, those kinds of things. All that equipment has to be either repaired or replaced. So the increase in spending that occurred as a result of Afghanistan and Iraq was immediately consumed in those ongoing operations.
But do you have to replace everything? Everything has to be replaced?
Well, you need to maintain a sufficient amount of combat power to secure your interests. So if you have NATO obligations, and certainly there's concerns about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Russia's invasion of Georgia, increased naval activity in the Baltic Sea higher than at any time since the end of the Cold War, you have to have a presence there. You also need to have a presence in the Western Pacific. North Korea is an emerging nuclear power. China, much more expansionist, building islands, laying claim to international waters. We've seen what's gone on in the Persian Gulf with Iran and its expansion into the broader Middle East in support of terrorism that has invaded not only Europe, but even onto the shores of the United States.
All right, Colonel, but it sounds to me like you're envisioning a 21st century which involves a possible war with Russia, a possible sea war with China, a nuclear confrontation with Iran and or North Korea. And the president, has said we don't win wars anymore, and so he presumably wants to win. He wants to win one of these conflicts. So, is that the future that we're looking at here?
What you do is you have to plan against potential contingencies and maintain a strong enough posture that those don't occur. So you're trying to prevent a war from happening. But if you show weakness and you don't have the ability to respond to an aggressive competitor, then they will fill in that space. You'll see more Russian activity across Europe, larger conflicts spurred by Iranian-backed terrorism and even stuff coming out of Saudi Arabia, and certainly a greater expansion is China. So, it's not a zero-sum game.
It's just because
we're quiet.
I totally hear what you're saying.
So by maintaining a strong front, you keep those wars from happening. But, now, the president's criticism about not winning is a different matter.
Well, but he's the commander-in-chief. He's the one who's asking for this $54 billion. He wants to win wars. As someone who used to be in the military, you hear the president saying, I want to win wars. Is that going to commit?
He is expressing a frustration that all Americans should have, that in spite of the military activity and the investment of American lives in these conflicts over the last 15 years, we haven't had satisfactory outcomes. Things haven't gotten better. And the criticism, I think, is rightly placed that the minimum effort to do anything was undertaken by the Obama administration. It wasn't sufficiently enough to actually solve these problems or to resolve them in a way that was satisfactory to American interests.
When you say that the only way to be ready in a war situation, as you envision, is to build up beyond anyone else's military capability, it sort of explains why, you know, the book 1984 is selling out everywhere. You know, war is peace. You know what I mean? I mean, do you understand
no,
why people go...
I think we're being quite unfair in those kinds of things, that you make war in order to have peace. That's not what anybody's saying. It's not what Ronald Reagan said. That's not what Eisenhower said. It's not what John F. Kennedy said. They said that you have a strong enough and competent enough military that it deters your opponent from taking action. If you have a weak capability, that it invites aggression. So the peace through strength is not intended to make war in order to have peace. It's to be ready for war so that your opponent doesn't take advantage of your weakened status.
Is that a stimulus package on some level? I mean, if just forget all the arguments over strategy and policy. Maybe the chief benefit of this is that it's a huge stimulus package.
Right. So you could be cranking out a lot of Humvees or tanks or making new airplanes, and it will benefit one portion of the economy. But as a percentage of the U.S. economy, it's a very, very small thing. I mean, we're talking a stimulus of, let's say, $54 billion that the president has recommended. That's on an $18 or $19 trillion economy. I mean, health care alone accounts for something like 17 or 20% of the U.S. economy. So when you look at all the other things that go on, as a matter of fact, the infrastructure modernization package that they're being debated at $1 trillion, you know, to fix decaying roads and bridges and tunnels and all the other things across the United States that benefits the economy writ large, that's a much more extensive package. $1 trillion versus $54 billion. I mean, you can't hardly even make that kind of comparison.
Lieutenant Colonel Wood served in the U.S. Marine Corps for 20 years. He's now a senior research fellow for defense programs at the Heritage Foundation. Thank you so much.
Really my pleasure. Thank you.
You can play this game at home. Where would you find $54 billion in the budget? You can't touch the military, though. Chicago, Illinois, I can't touch the military. That's the only thing that I would reasonably cut from.
This is Melissa Willis from Wilsonville, Virginia. If I were in charge of the federal budget and had to make cuts, I would start with congressional salaries, perks and pensions to bring them in line with the people they serve.
John, and I'm calling from Louisville, Kentucky. To balance the budget, first thing I would do is cut off foreign aid, all of it. Second, welfare, corporate welfare and individual welfare. Cut it. After those two steps, it'd be time to reevaluate and decide what needed to be cut next.
What would you cut from the federal budget? Let us know, 877-8-MY-TAKE, or join the conversation on the Takeaways Facebook page.